Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Dedicated to Henry Farman. In the year of the primal form, the dawn of terrestrial birth, man mastered the mammoth and horde.
Arise from the dead and attack from the grave. The killing won't stop until first light. We'll bring you to hell because we want to enslave. Your soul be frozen with fright. We'll break through the crust, leave from our crypts protected by eternal life. Lay down the laws from our satanic scripts, bringing you nothing but strife. Death metal. Yeah, why am I reading that? Who knows? I think it's just because I happen to have a copy of Seven Churches on vinyl, of course, original, sitting right in front of me as I was listening to it just before beginning this podcast. So I thought, well, wouldn't that be quite the thing to start off Tuesday's music, heavy metal, rock and roll podcast, all that kind of thing. And also, it's just a bit cult. Wasn't that the back of that shirt from my good friends in... God damn it, I can't remember the name of the band. Anyway, has my good friend Nick Barker in it. And it says, Seven Churches on vinyl or fuck off. Answers in the comments who I am talking about. My grey matter is, shall we say, under some attack from the ravages of time. Well, Tuesday's podcast is really just something simple. It's basically a day in the life of a big festival, or what is it like to play a big festival, all the kind of things that go on behind the scenes. Seeing as Primordial just played Hellfest, and I'm sure there are many of you who are listening who went there. Certainly, I met quite a lot of people who came up to me because of the talk to me because of the podcast and that kind of thing, which was great to actually meet people in person who have been listening to it and had some questions or comments, and thankfully all pretty positive, which is quite it's quite a cool thing, because when I started doing the podcast, it was mainly just a way to combat the insanity of lockdown, and you're not really quite sure who you're speaking to because you're just sitting in a room speaking into a microphone, as I am now, from a cold and grainy, well, I suppose it is kind of grainy, grey and rainy, overcast Dublin. While, of course, last weekend, if you've been at Hellfest, you will know it was almost 40 degrees. But I suppose the clue is in the name, Hellfest, right? Yeah, pretty hot. How's that for a pun? So anyway, they say, write about what you know. So I think it was the fifth time that we played Hellfest, fourth or fifth time, perhaps. And so I thought I would just do one of these Tuesday podcasts about what it is like to play at a big festival. Before we continue, the show is sponsored by metalblade.com. You can use the promo code ALAN in North America, which includes the Canada, as long as your assets are not frozen. And you can order there and use that promo code and get 10% off your order, all that kind of thing. The links will be below in the description. And there are some other returning sponsors, but I shall mention them in a moment. Now, if any of you have gone to Hellfest, I mean, I must say that even though Wacken Open Air has stepped up its game in recent years, and by that I mean basically making the field, making the festival itself into an incredible experience, So just set the scene at Hellfest. I mean, since we played there, it has not only got bigger and bigger and bigger, but the experience itself, when you enter, you basically feel like, yeah, you're entering another sort of, I suppose what it is the influence of computer games, is the influence of all of that kind of culture to kind of create a landscape. And Hellfest kind of looks like some sort of dystopian steampunk adventure castle, some sort of Disney from hell, if you want to call it like that. It is quite incredible. It's an incredible spectacle. For example, the road when you enter, which has all, you know, the shops and the merchandise and all that kind of stuff, is kind of made to be like a spaghetti western. I suppose you would have all the lean-tos, all the saloon bar entrances. It's all kind of wooden, but kind of made like a film set. And, you know, in the distance, you can see what looks like the mirage of a sort of steampunk castle. The whole main arena has got a kind of castle ramparts running all along its, you know, frontier, which, while bands are playing, are shooting 10, 20-foot jets of flame into the air. There's like hands holding laser Sauron eyes sort of gleaming out, looking out over the crowd. There is just random cauldrons of effluvial gas, gaseous sort of, I don't know what you would call this, portals to hell, whatever you want to call it, opening, spilling out smoke over the crowd. I mean, it's quite incredible. And this year, for the bands or for people who are in the, you know, the backstage bit, there was what they called the panorama bar, where you walked up and you could see out over the crowd and see the main stage. I mean, quite incredible. It's a work of genius, you must really concede. And it gets bigger and huger every year. And I could see that if I was a 16, 17-year-old, 19-year-old punter, it would literally just be awe-inspiring to be able to go and see, you know, everything from Youth of Today all the way to, I don't know, let's say Five Finger Death Punch, who I'm going to do a bit of a podcast on for some reason, but I'll explain that later. The experience is almost overwhelming compared to when I went to festivals in the mid-90s, which is really just a field, some gates, here's a tent, here's a band. Okay, so that band was Manowar, Merciful Fate, or Metallica. Great. But there was no real effort to put into making this an interactive experience. So you really get some bang for your buck for at Hellfest Open Air, and to just walk around and just take in all the sights. Like I said, it's like being in some sort of steampunk dystopian Disneyland from hell, and it is quite incredible, and the work that goes into creating that every year. I mean, as I understand, I think the people have bought the land, maybe I could be wrong in that, and so I think their structures are stay there permanently. I certainly don't know how you could dismantle some of them and then put them back up, or what would even be the point in that, or you just add to things like some crazy Jenga puzzle all the time. But what you certainly notice, and this is one of the first things, is that the amount of money that this brings into the local economy. Clisson, when you're in it, which is a local village or town, and Nantes also. Arrive in Nantes Airport, and when you go through arrivals, the sliding door just basically says, welcome to hell, Hellfest, etc., etc. So what normal people landing must think of that is quite incredible. But Hellfest has co-opted the entire region. Everything from jam to clothing to everything that you go to Clisson is hell this, hell that. The local mayor must be on his or her knees thanking the people who created Hellfest for the millions. It must bring millions upon millions of euro into that local economy. And to think that if you project that against some of my podcasts over the past year or two, which have been about how, you know, lockdown and its fundamental nature, its sort of authoritarian nature and the sort of stay-at-home culture, I think it may attempt to enforce on people. You have that on the one hand, and then you place this huge influx of money into the local economy and the experience that itself has. But it is, you wonder which can win out. Because let's be honest, stay-at-home culture, when you understand that so many small towns and villages are built on tourism, they're built on experiences like this that bring money into the local economy. that are different to the usual governmental measures, you realise how important they are. And if you get rid of live music and it does not happen, this does not happen. And who do those people in those local towns vote for? I would say they probably vote for either extreme party who promises something a bit different, etc., etc. Knock-ons, repercussions, every action has a reaction, etc., etc. But I'm not going to get bogged down in the political context, because that's maybe for Friday. So how does it begin for Primordial? Well, what happens is our booking agent gets an offer. Here is the offer, XXX amount of money, whatever. And then this is transferred to the band. We all see if we are available. Generally, of course, as I've said before in the podcast, and people don't believe me, Primordial is not a professional band. And when I say professional, I mean you can make a living from. As in, if you're an electrician and you make your living as an electrician, you could say, I'm a professional electrician. But the fact is, most musicians don't make a living from music. In fact, a very tiny percentage. So in theory, most of the bands on the bill at Hellfest, at least unless you're on the main stage, everyone else, probably everyone, and that means every band in all the other stages, with the exception of maybe the final band. But even that is difficult. Speaking to the Mayhem guys, they will tell you the same thing. They all need supplementary incomes. And so therefore, that is not being considered, in my opinion, a professional musician. Anyway, so the offer comes into our booking agent. We see if we are available, because as you say, or as I said, you might be working another job that weekend. You might not have the days off work. There are all these very normal concerns. But by and large, we've never turned down a Hellfest. So the day begins, I suppose, at about 4 or 5 in the morning, unless you've gone over the day before, but 4 or 5 in the morning for the band. Flights now, you very rarely get a comfortable flight at 11, 12, 1, 1 p.m. You know, later morning, early morning. There's very rarely, it's a nice comfortable flight at 2 p.m. where you get somewhere at 4. What has happened, and this is post-pandemic, and I think it's been accelerating for the last couple of years, but certainly post-pandemic, is everything seems like hassle. Nothing seems like an easy route anymore. Airports are in chaos post-pandemic. They can't get people to work for them. They can't get people to work within them. Why is that? Because they don't pay enough, and the cost of living crisis has made it almost untenable and impossible and unworkable. And an awful lot of, I suppose, the migrant classes who would have once worked in airports have also returned home as well. And that's a circumstance that belongs to pandemic and lockdown, where people decided to go back to the countries where they came from very often because they found them less restrictive. Certainly, that is the case in Ireland. And who would blame them? No one. In fact, they could have taken me with them. I would have been very happy. Anyway, maybe not happy, but, you know, less like the main character in Taxi Driver. Let's just say that. Anyway, what was his name? Travis Bickle. Yeah, there you go. Less Bickle. I would have been less Bickle, more Pickle. Whatever you want. Anyway, so the day starts early. We all meet at Dublin Airport. You're advised now to be 2 or 3 hours in advance to avoid the huge, insane queues. We were able to fly this time into Nantes Airport, which is the nearest to Hellfest. We don't bring spare guitars, which is unusual, for some bands bring those kind of coffin-shaped double guitars. We don't. If you break a string, then you literally have to restring it on the stage. We didn't bring crew for Hellfest. Sometimes we have one person doing front of house, one person doing lights, as it happened for Hellfest. The sound man from the band Necrophobic stood in and did a great job by all accounts. Much kudos to him. But you know, you have to kind of feel out and look around for who could do the sound, etc., etc., if you don't have any crew. Now, some bands have crew, some bands don't. For example, this time at Hellfest, we played after Rotting Christ. They had some guys with Rotting Christ shirts on helping them out afterwards. We didn't bring anyone. So you don't bring, we didn't bring extra guitars. Also, we have a left-handed guitar player. So if you lose, and we have been in this situation before, where the, especially if you connect through Schiphol in Amsterdam, this is a connecting airport where often things are lost and tight. Connections are very, very tight. I don't know why. It's just notorious among bands. Charles de Gaulle and Schiphol, if you want to lose stuff. And if you lose a left-handed guitar and you only have one, that puts you in a really difficult position, because you need to find another band on the bill with a left-handed guitar who are willing to lend you that left-handed guitar. And we've been in that position 2 or 3 times. In fact, we played in Estonia And we had to, I had to literally put out on social media a call for, do we have a left-handed guitar player in Estonia who is coming to the gig, who can bring a guitar? And that's basically what we had to do. Yeah. You know, you think we'd know better, but you also have to understand that now that flights are 300, 400, 500 euro, that used to be 100 euro, and a guitar 50 euro each way, bringing a guitar for four flights takes 200 or maybe 250 euro off the money that you make at the end. And now that, because we're being, as I said, gouged with inertia so often these days, the temptation is to just not bring all that stuff. So anyway, what happens is you have your time slot. You're 9 p.m. Let's say for Primordial was 9 p.m. You must be there. They want you there 3 to 4 hours in advance. How it works is you're supposed to, theoretically, go down several bands before. What you will have on our stage, let's just take the last few bands, Rotting Christ, Primordial, Aboth, Mayhem. Every band has a slot, like a parking space behind the stage, behind the huge curtain. Within that parking space is your gear, your guitars, all this kind of stuff. So your theory, you're supposed to arrive sometime on the festival, 3, 4, 5 hours in advance, bring your stuff down to this parking space, and then go back to the backstage. And then when it's about an hour, hour and a half beforehand, you're supposed to go back down. There may be three drum kits lined up in a row at the side of the stage, stage left. And say if you were looking at our stage in Hellfest, stage left. That's why the stage was a little bit off-center. There was a bigger space to the left, which had, the kind of Hellfest logo behind it. The reason for that is because there's three drum kits lined up, and then three movable sets of backline. Backline is amps and heads, all the stuff you see that we play through. So all of those are on wheels. And each band, basically in a row, basically like a parking spaces. You're moving up one, and then you're moved aside. So as one drum kit is, so as Rotting Christ are playing, our drummer is setting up his drums to stage right. Well, for us, stage right, you stage left. He's setting up his cymbals and everything. You're not supposed to play while the other band are playing. Some bands do, which is really fucking annoying, but by and large, it's not something you do. It's kind of disrespectful. But you set up your amps, your heads. Previously to that, you have your rider, your technical rider, which your booking agent sends to the festival, which says, Primordial wants, lately we've moved to Orange. If there's any Orange people working in Ireland who would like to sponsor Primordial, please get in touch. It might be a good idea. Anyway, there's a little backstory to that I won't explain. But how great it would be. Anyway, so Orange is kind of what we've moved to. Ampeg is the bass. Ampeg, which is the kind of standard, the huge fridge bass amps you see, and Orange we've sort of moved to, an old Marshalls. Anyway, so we are at the side of the stage while Rotting Christ is playing, maybe 20 minutes before they start. It's great. You get to watch Rotting Christ. Brilliant. One of my favorite bands and such old friends and great people. Anyway, so you set up your equipment at the side, and when Rotting Christ is finished, literally the crew come on, wheel the drums to the back of the drums or on a riser with wheels, and wheel off their amps and move them to the side and back. And then ours are wheeled and moved on. It's all a very, very clinical process. Their backline is then dismantled, and Abbott's backline is moved up as into the next in position. It's kind of like, I suppose, flights waiting to take off. It's supremely organized. The crew, of course, at Hellfest are supremely professional. And everything you can imagine is taken care of. There are some festivals, of course, now you can see post-pandemic, a lot of crew moved off into other jobs. And so people have volunteers who don't really know about gear or about tech or about stuff. People helping are people helping. But sometimes if you have too many people around, it can kind of get in the way. And so, you know, Hellfest itself was 40 degrees. How do we cope with that? Personally, the rest of the guys are a bit later than me arriving at the festival. So I spend the time being agitated, stressed out, and pacing up and down, because that's my manner. Some people lock into a good chat with somebody, sit and meet old friends. I do, but I find myself in an endless cycle of 90-second conversations with people because you're anxious, you're waiting to play. Oddly enough, I have no nerves before playing. I don't feel anxious or butterflies or nerves. I know, you know, my old, how should we say, well, Aaron from My Dying Bride once told me that before every gig he has to get sick. He feels so nervous. Very interesting. I never felt that. I never felt any nerves, so to speak. Not in 15 years. So a huge crowd like Hellfest, which is 10, 12,000 people, whatever it is, I don't have any nerves. What I do worry a bit about is my voice. As you can hear, it's still a bit bleh. But what I do, especially when it's hot, it's 40 degrees during the day, what you try and do is not speak too much, drink water, as the Andreas from Necrophobic told me, eat something salty to keep the water in. So good ideas like peanuts or something like this, or something with some good salt in it to stop you just endlessly peeing all day. But you have to stay really hydrated. When is that not good advice? Stay hydrated for your entire life. That's good advice, right? Stay hydrated. Anyway, and so I don't drink. I didn't drink any alcohol before playing at Hellfest, or any alcohol afterwards, which may strike some people as unusual. Especially people who know me might find it incredible. But it's just too damn hot, and there's too much riding on this festival, and I can't afford to not sing very well. I had a new microphone. You go over, you talk to the monitor person. The monitors, like I said, are the wedges in the front of the stage where we hear our own, what we want to hear of the rest of the band. For me, the two in the front are only vocals. I don't need anything else because everyone else is so loud. You walk over to this particular Hellfest, Kieron's side of the stage was pretty loud. He had pretty pumping a guitar behind him, which is fine when the height of the stage is above people's heads, and people are 6, 7, 8 feet away, which is what Hellfest is. If the stage is lower and the crowd are right up against the stage, you really need to keep those amps down, because people at the front will just get blasted by basically super loud guitar. But on a big, big, huge stage like Hellfest, which is 30, 40 feet across and 30, 40 feet deep maybe, you can afford to have your amp pumping, which the guys did. Anyway, so I go over and I will say to the monitor, I need only vocals, and we'll work out a hand signal system where I'll just point to whoever it is and like say, you know, four fingers, which means four strings, bass, and just, you know, kind of, how shall we say, subtly point to the member I want a little bit higher. And you try to not let the crowd see this, because it makes things a bit weird if you're screaming and shouting at the monitor guy. But you turn your back and look at the drums and then look at the guy and go, up a little bit. You know the symbol. You know the symbol. It's kind of the same symbol you might use to infer that somebody has a small genitalia. You do like this, which means turn it up a little tiny bit. Anyway, of course, that would have made sense if you could see what I was doing here. I didn't mean it like that. Anyway, so no, I don't have any fear. I don't have any nerves. Don't get anxious. None of this kind of thing. It's really just about the voice. As long as once you hit that first verse of the first song and you're like, I'm in, I'm dialed in, it's going to be fine. Good. You feel confident. As I said before, about singing. In fact, I'm doing a podcast. I'm recording another one now about singing, about what is, you know, some of the key ingredients to trying to sing on stage, etc., etc. Anyway, so once you get through that first 2 or 3 minutes and everything sounds good and you feel confident and you know the crowd are with you, behind you, of course, there's always the worry when you're playing between such incredible bands as Rotting Christ and Abbath, that worry, that, like, will people still be interested in the band? Are, you know, after the 2 or 3 years, are we less popular now? You have to acknowledge those things. Sometimes, and I see it sometimes with a band, they come running out and they're, you know, crestfallen because the tent is kind of empty or whatever, you know? And you wonder, wow, how did that happen? You could be clashing with a huge band on the other stage. If you're, for example, you know, a sort of a newer thrash band and you have to go up against Slayer, Creator, Megadeth on the main stage, sometimes this can be hard. But if you're in a big tent, don't forget also at 40 degrees heat, many people come into the tent to get out of the sun as well. So usually those tents are pretty bloody full, but you really preferably would like to be playing as the sun is going down so things are less bleeding warm. But yeah, clashing with a huge band on the main stage, that can be very difficult. I remember playing Sweden Rock once, the first time, and we were standing on the stage about 100 metres away from watching Poison. We were after Poison, and I don't mean German Into the Abyss, Poison. I mean, Your Mama Don't Dance, etc., Poison. And they put on a great show. And I just looked up and realised we'd brought the small backdrop and it just looked like a postage stamp on this huge stage. And I just thought, oh, look at this. How ridiculous we look after the, you know, fireworks and explosions and luminous pink logo of Poison. Well, anyway. And I didn't wear a headband in or a mandana in solidarity with Bret Michaels that night. However, anyway, so you play your Hellfest gig. It goes great. You do lose so much. I think you must lose pounds in sweat, at least for me as someone who moves around and kind of runs around a little bit a la black metal Bruce Dickinson. You lose an awful lot of body sweat or whatever. And so the first thing you want to do, of course, is just rehydrate, stay hydrated again. And then you just have to kind of, I suppose, just sort of calm down, just sort of take a moment to consider what just happened. I'm often lately now worried about my hearing. So the kind of earplugs that you have, lately I haven't found the right ones, you know, still on the verge of figuring out my in-ears, wireless in-ears. And you just decided to dismantle the stage. You take down your backdrops, you fold them up. If you've got crew, this is what they do. And then you just kind of end up sitting in the backstage, sort of going over, have you made any mistakes? What could have been better? By and large, thankfully, what playing live is, what you want to do is reach the Dennis Irwin, and that's a football reference, the Dennis Irwin stage, where the worst gigs are 7 out of 10. Or 6 if something really breaks or goes wrong. But if your worst gig is still good, because on the stage something can go wrong that the audience will never notice. Or if the sound stage is bad, maybe the audience never notice if you've got a good sound man, etc. So that's what you want to reach. You want to reach a level where you just don't have bad gigs. Even your bad gig is still a good gig, by all accounts. And when you hit the right note, you get an incredible gig, a great gig. And so this is the Hellfest experience. Then you have a couple of hours to wind down. But from my side, I had to get up at 6 a.m. the next morning to fly from Nantes to Paris, Paris to Dublin, get in a car and drive 4 hours to Derry in Northern Ireland to play Frost and Fire with Dread Sovereign and then play again with the covers band Heavy Artillery after that. So I'm a sucker for punishment, a glutton for punishment. And there's never a moment of taking it easy or just being like, well, maybe I just shouldn't do that and try and, you know, take care of my grey matter or your voice or whatever else. It's always, you know, sort of tally forth into the fray. Wow, what a modern cultural reference that is. You just keep on keeping on. And so the Hellfest experience generally, then you get a couple of hours afterwards. And like I said, I found myself watching Five Finger Death Punch. And it made me consider the implications of taste when it comes to metal. And so I'm going to do a podcast about people's taste. Is it wrong or right to criticize, you know, what is a band that clearly many, many people enjoy? And so it's kind of interesting. I've been writing something and I'm going to do a podcast about that. It's been slightly influenced by, I'm very big fan of the Justin Hawkins of The Darkness, his YouTube channel. Which I think he tries to analyse music from a quite interesting and objective point of view, but also not just say, everything sucks, everything's terrible, everything's horrible. Anyway. And I also am quite the fan of the first Darkness album. Anyway, that's besides the point. How does big... When you're a band, a medium-sized band at a big festival, you're kind of like a cog in the apparatus. But the rewards are playing in front of this big, huge crowd. And they are worth it. I will say this, though, that merch sales compared to what they were 10 years ago for playing festivals are 10% of what they were. People go to a big festival like that. And when I say that the experience, the festival experience of Hellfest has become so huge, so incredible, so overwhelming, people buy Hellfest merch. They don't necessarily go and look for your merch as they used to anymore. I remember playing festivals for the first time in Sweden and Finland, and you couldn't bring enough shirts for people to buy. First festival in Finland, there was hundreds of people trying to buy shirts 5 minutes after we played. I don't think that's the experience of playing at Tuska Festival anymore. Tuska, another great festival, really awesome to play. But I don't think that's the experience for most bands anymore. Maybe it is for the big, big bands, but I sense the days of bands selling pretty decent merch and coming home with a bit of extra cash, that ain't happening anymore. And certainly it ain't happening in a cashless society. But however, that's again another question. So the rewards, I suppose, on those terms are slightly different. And certainly, I think the idea of bands moving their fees up is something that the industry is pushing against. But of course, that's natural. That's business, right? But yet, I will say that compared to 10 years ago, flights that once cost 100 are now costing sometimes 500 euro to mainland Europe once you add in baggage. However, that's not what we're here to discuss. So Tuesday's podcast is just a little sort of anecdotal half an hour ramble through the day's experience of playing a big festival. And it is ultimately very rewarding. You have to project yourself in a different way. You know, my thing is to make eye contact with people and be sort of, how we say, visually intense and very in people's faces. And you can't do that when you're 6, 7, 8 feet away. So sometimes you have to you have to project. You have to make your gestures slower and broader. And you have to allow for the lights behind you to move. And which is hard if you're in there during the day or it's not dark yet. But you have to allow them to do some of the work. And you also have to allow the music to speak for itself. You can't be worried all the time about, is this song hitting the right note, etc., etc. As in, I do have a problem with maybe too many hey, hey, heys, you know, where you're trying to get the crowd into what you're doing. But to be honest, at a festival, when you've got 50 minutes, you have to hit hard with your five songs for promoting. That's 40 minutes, so 6 songs. Hit hard with your biggest punches. People often say, oh, why you didn't play something from the second album? And the reason is because you've got to hit with your 6 hardest punches. If you want obscure songs, you've got to come to the club show and you'll hear some. But a festival, maybe you have time for one curveball or two. If primordial songs are 7, 8, 9 minutes long, you've got to hit with your biggest punches. So you've got it, Coffin Ships, Empire Falls, Rome Burns, blah, 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 blah. If you're going to hear something obscure from the third album, or that probably isn't going to happen. A big festival is not really the place for having 8, 9, 10 minutes falling on. I'm not going to say deaf ears, but I will say, like I said, you got to land with your biggest punches. And that's kind of how it is. You've got to slightly alter your stage interaction, your interaction with the crowd. You've got to make broader gestures. You've got to try and project your voice more. You've got to try and reach the person at the back of the tent somehow. And that's the stagecraft that's different between playing in a small club, a small venue, and playing to 10,000 people or 15,000 people. And that's just something you learn, or you don't learn, or you just, it's not your thing and you let the music speak for yourself. So on those terms, I suppose primordial is a little bit more old fashioned, a kind of more old fashioned traditional heavy metal band. As I said, the Bruce Dickinson model probably has rubbed off somewhere there, and standing still and brooding isn't exactly my forte. I think I'm too agitated to do that. But that is what you have to do. Overall, playing big festivals is, by and large, a great experience. It's something that I really enjoy. It is stressful, of course, being a cog in the machine, and it's somewhat impersonal. But that's just how it is. The fact that you also get to play the personal festivals as well is the compensation. So, for example, Hellfest is on the same weekend as the Houses of the Holy on the Mountain in Austria, which is the complete antithesis of what a big festival is. It is the ultimate personal festival, you know, which feels like family, feels like something magical and special. But to go from one to the other, that's the beauty of being, I suppose, in a band, or being able to do both of those things, be in both of those worlds. And that's something I wouldn't trade, being in the mainstream, but also being able to play, as I said, the Houses of the Holy. Anyway, my friends, just a ramble across a day at Hellfest. And I didn't get sunburnt, and I didn't lose my voice, and I stayed hydrated. Well, my friends, Agitators Anonymous Tuesday episode, stay hydrated out there. That is the moral of this heavy metal story.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.